I think that the capitalist system is going to crash anytime. I don't know when, but it's basically unstable. It's terminally ill. And so I think it's going to end very soon. And when it ends, at that point, suddenly everybody will be looking at these small examples of cooperation and cooperatives and local economies and locally grown food and so on. So what today is very difficult will suddenly become much, much easier when this change happens. And that then it will be very easy to make simple laws that will prohibit the vast accumulation of wealth without limit. They use this funny word, economic freedom. What a silly idea. Freedom is a human right. And economic freedom isn't about any human right at all. It's about the right of greed to accumulate wealth without any limits. That's not freedom. That's exploitation. And the business news indicates that the system will go on forever. And actually, human systems usually don't go on forever. They tend to change. They tend to, one system ends and another system takes its place. And that's what I think is happening. It's actually in the process now. You don't see it happening. But, you know, who saw the crash in 2009 coming? And the economists said we came very close at that time, you know, to the whole thing collapsing. And we're not really any more ready for the next one, except that each crisis that comes is bigger than the last one. We know that.
Rory McKiernan, one of the organisers of the meeting, has a very impressive pedigree. He's an award-winning campaigner and a founder of Spun Out, the not-for-profit website created by young people for young people. In 2012, he was appointed by President Michael D. Higgins to the Irish Council of State. He described progressive Irish politics in its current format as next to dying. People are, he said, now searching for something that embraces the full complexity of their lives.
I mean, you look at, say, left or progressive politics in Ireland, and in its current format, it's not dead, but it's next to dying, and people are tired and jaded by it, and the analysis can still be very good, but it's just not appealing and attractive for different reasons. But I think that it doesn't fully take into account the full complexity of human nature and what brings happiness, for instance. I know economics, food and shelter absolutely do, but I think like the mindful activism approach looks at the full depth of humanity and looks at life in a deeper way, and it talks about our relationship with ecology even. You know, that's something I don't hear quite often in left politics, is like talking about Mother Earth, Mother Nature. It's always, you know, is the environment over there, and we'll get to that at the end, but it has to be central. So for me, it's about a new consciousness, really.
AFRI, Action from Ireland, presented the evening. As a small Irish NGO, it has built over the years a very powerful reputation for raising awareness around human rights, justice, and more recently, sustainability issues. Its focus is both local and global. Joe Murray, the coordinator of AFRI, urged people not to get overly pessimistic because he believed that change was happening.
We have to focus on what we can do, and there's an awful lot that we can do, and there's an awful lot happening. I just spent last week travelling around Ireland with our friend and partner from Northern Kenya, Abjata Khalif, and he was speaking about the work he's doing in Northern Kenya in extraordinarily difficult circumstances. And he's doing phenomenal work. So to hear about what he's doing in those conditions, but also to hear people's response. And it reminded me tonight of this, you know, we're talking about the need for community and the need for cooperation. And I think what Rory said is we're ready for it, but it just hasn't happened, you know. But sometime the spark has to be lit, and maybe the spark will be a little bit, the flame will be fanned a little bit after tonight's meeting.
And yet, the cooperative movement resonates very deeply in our own culture.
Very deeply, very deeply. I call one of the visits we made last week with Abjata was to Fergal Anderson, who's trying to establish the food sovereignty movement in Ireland. and he's running a small farm producing organic food and supplying his own community. And it's extraordinarily hopeful and inspiring. And I think we really need to see those things and visit and support and encourage them and create the new reality, create the new world that we all want.
What made the evening so interesting was the diversity and backgrounds of many of those who attended.
I am in the IFSC of all places. That's my local community. And we try to do something there, you know, which has to resonate with the whole idea of united higher humanity. That's what we are. I think, you know, there are a lot of people here who need to be among people just to feel the connection and, you know, share the resources and start from this, you know, because, you know, the sense of isolation is something that we've all kind of, you know, talked about, you know, and it is reality. We have to embrace that, you know, and go past it as well, you know. So community, community, community.
One young woman who described herself as a lecturer in international law provided on the night a depressing insight into what could be described as the corporatization of third level education.
What I've noticed more and more as well is that education at elite universities is becoming more and more important. So really, people who go to one of the top 10 or 20 universities in the world have very good employment chances at top jobs, whereas other degrees are generally disregarded now, at least in my field. And so I think it's almost like a bit of a scam for the students. Unfortunately, I really feel bad having to say this. I mean, but I feel like they're paying for an education that they're not getting. You know, they really need to be, you need to nurture people, but you also need to push them and to challenge them to really get them to achieve all of their abilities. And it's kind of more like now a little bit almost like a factory, like a Henry Ford Model T factory, where you kind of take them in and pump them out and, you know, do a little bit of work in between, but not what should really be there for quality education. The scope of studies is becoming a lot more narrow because it's guided very much towards immediate employability after university, and with cutting out anything that doesn't immediately forward that goal, which might, however, prove very useful to the students in later life. And also, it's always a matter of funding, attracting students and offering programs that might not really be useful but are going to provide funding to the university. So to me, that's the kind of downside, is that instead of it being a public good that's meant to sustain the economy for years to come, because of course these people finish when they're 25, but they won't, you know, they'll survive until they're 80 or 90, hopefully. It's really a short-term solution that doesn't allow them to continue sustainability for the rest of their lives and make them productive.
Do you think academics themselves are speaking out enough about what's going on?
I don't think so, because most of them, of course, are in employment, and they, you know, even though some people have permanent positions and therefore they can't lose their job, of course, they might stall their career or they might cause a big controversy that causes difficulty for them in their career. So I do think that a lot of people don't really want to admit to themselves as well that they're being, you know, fairly complicit in this. If anything, I think I do law, so I notice in my faculty, people, if anything, have really internalized the corporate message and are perfectly happy to act like the university is a corporation that doesn't deliver any public benefit.
For others, the evening was both inspirational and affirming.
I ended up studying theology, and when I studied theology, I learned about spirituality and spirituality to do with the environment as well. Funny, I became a teacher, and what I do is I try and teach spirituality, and I find it very, very empowering. But spirituality in the sense that it's an active thing, like social justice. I would, let's say, my students are doing a project about the Congo at the moment. So we're very, very involved with conflict minerals and trying to lobby the government and politicians to really try and change that in the Congo. 6 million died since 1996. So my students are spiritual, but they're also active as well.
Interestingly, there was a strong emphasis on the night of the importance of meditation and mindfulness, something that seemed to resonate with many.
Because meditation is so important to me in my journey as well, I listen to that, and I also know that it appears that, you know, the money makers are the people who rule the world, but I know in my own experience, and, you know, I'm a certain age now too, that they're not the people who rule the world. There is an inner core that when we do come together, whether to play together or to work together or to meditate together, we tap into that inner wisdom. That is the great spirit and the great wisdom, and I do believe that underneath what appears to be, you know, so tragic and everything collapsing, that there is something happening. You know, and there's the re-empowering of the feminine consciousness too, in men and women. That is very, very creative, and we are birthing something new. There is something new being birthed.